This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place Me Nation, welcome back to the WWE Pay-Per-View Reaction Show Series. I'm your host, Chris Zellner, joined as always by my co-host on this show, Devin Hales, the Oracle of WWE. Devin, what's up?
Nothing much, man. I'm kind of intrigued and excited. The ending of the show, as we'll get to, was not particularly my favorite thing, but I'm definitely intrigued and excited for what I would like to call 3 months of stagnation and nothing of, you know, interest going on in WWE. That's pretty much over. So we're going into SummerSlam now, and the big-time hype for the change to SmackDown will come soon, and I'm ready for WWE to start picking things up again.
Yes, as tonight we had Extreme Rules in Philadelphia, the last pay before SummerSlam. And before we talk about the show, since we last joined you, some major changes behind the scenes have taken place in WWE, as Paul Heyman has now become the executive director of Monday Night Raw. So he's in charge of the creative there. And Aaron Bischoff is in charge of SmackDown. Hasn't taken over yet, but will as soon as this Tuesday. So now we have Heyman and Bischoff back in. Heyman's already started. We've already seen some of his things already being implemented into the show. What's your thoughts on this situation?
I'm skeptical, but skeptical. I'm more of a skeptical optimist, I think, when it comes to this. I think a lot of people have sort of jumped to the conclusion that it's either an amazing, wonderful idea that will change things for the better instantaneously, or there are people who stick with the belief that, you know, WWE needs to avoid the 1990s. That was 20, 25 years ago. These are staples from that period. This, you know, their ideologies and way of running wrestling no longer works. You know, it's just going to be a desperate attempt to compete with the new and cool AEW on the other side. Of course, that's been brought up many times in recent weeks since this announcement. I'm more in between. You know, I think, you know, I suspect good and bad things will come with the territory. I kind of think more good than bad. I think it depends on how much Vince relinquished their creative direction of both shows to Bischoff and Heyman. I read, I think it might have been PWO, someone made a great point that one of the reasons they brought in Bischoff, particularly to go on SmackDown, is Bischoff is someone who might be a good liaison to deal with the Fox executives. Bischoff was a guy who worked with, you know, Turner executives for years in the 90s. He has a very good idea of how to work with big network executives. So I think that was an interesting point that somebody brought up, although, of course, he'll have, you know, creative direction as well. But, I would call myself a skeptical optimist on this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's just wait and see. It's just them being proactive and trying to do something that will, change it up a little bit. So we'll see what happens. I mean, the past 2 weeks of Raw have had enough different things and new things going on that, it's showing a difference. So, and we'll see how SmackDown is when Bischoff puts his hands in it. So, I mean, the two guys, they have, track records. that they could put it on. And this is like, but and this is, you know, the argument. Yeah, I mean, it, 20 years ago, and pro sports do this, does the same type of shit too, where they'll bring in the guy who's a, you know, older guy, bring him back, who had won championships, bring him back and put him in the front office, you know. And a lot of times that doesn't work. Sometimes it does. It all depends on who the person is. Heyman, I mean, one thing we can say about Paul Heyman is Paul Heyman definitely has his finger on the pulse in a lot of ways on what's going on the wrestling scene. Bischoff, not so much. That's going to be the interesting part with him. You know, he's not been around. Heyman's been around a while with WWE, and he knows what's going on in the indie scene. So he's gotten more of an advantage than Bischoff does. But we'll definitely see how it plays out. And look, Bischoff's going to smooze with the Fox guys too. That's his the ace in the hole that he has to help him out. He's going to have to be that liaison between Vince and the network in ways. So yeah, we'll see. But tonight was Extreme Rules, and that's another thing that's been going with Raw lately, is Heyman has been adding his little touches to it, but he also had to, you know, set up this pay-per-view. So you have to do two things at one time. So we'll see what happens after Extreme Rules on Raw, now that they're free from that commitment, and what kind of new storylines and new angles we got going on. But tonight, we begin with the pre-show. We had two matches. And the Intercontinental title match was the very first match in the pre-show. Finn Balor versus Shinsuke Nakamura. And these two have had a little thing on SmackDown recently, after both not being on TV much in recent weeks. This was okay. I thought that the match on SmackDown probably was a better match than what this one was. Nakamura definitely is motivated to wrestle Balor. That's for sure. And which is interesting, because his matches with Styles were always panned for many reasons. But him and Balor seem to have a whole lot better chemistry with each other. It's interesting to see how that goes. But anyway, Nakamura hits a Kinshasa to the back of the head, then hits it into the front, gets the win, new Intercontinental Champion. It's interesting to have the Intercontinental title has been portrayed recently, even with Balor having it. Balor going to SmackDown has been a huge bust for him. and the wild card has been the main reason why that is, more often than not. But, yeah, Nakamura getting this renewed push. What's your thoughts on the match?
The match was good. I have not been a particularly big fan of Nakamura lately in the last year or so. I kind of almost find him to be channel changing. But he definitely put in the effort this last week in the SmackDown match and the match tonight. You know, mostly my problem with him is his effort, and, you know, which I get. I mean, you know, you're cashing checks, and he had an amazing career in Japan and came over to the States and cashing checks. I get it. Balor's actually had an excellent year this year in the ring, and I think he's probably the perfect role and perfect person to be the mid-card ace. I think he's developed into a great mid-card ace, and his in-ring work has improved greatly too. I thought it was a good match. I will say one thing about Nakamura's ring work. I do like that he's added the sliding snap German from the ropes. That's a cool little move that he's added into his repertoire. But yeah, clean win. I was a little bit surprised that Nakamura won. I'm kind of interested what they're going to do with Balor. You know, they've got this, reinvention. Well, I guess it wouldn't be reinvention, reformation of the club. So maybe he goes over to Raw and gets involved with that. I mean, there's the wild card rule, the dumb wild card rule, which is still in effect, at least as of right now. He could get involved in that. I'm more interested to see what they do with Balor now that he's lost that title. I'm not sure they'll do really anything with Nakamura with the title, honestly. You know, eventually they probably will. Once, you know, SmackDown moves to Fox and the wild card rule kind of fizzles out. I think you're right about that. I think it'll probably fizzle out by the fall. But yeah, what they do with Balor is interesting to me.
Well, the thing with Nakamura and Balor, they're probably going to keep going against each other because there's really no.
Yeah.
I mean, who's the babyface on SmackDown that's going to go if you with Nakamura? Apollo Crews?
I mean, that's about the only other option.
I mean, unless they do something with Andrade, you know, maybe do Andrade Nakamura. I don't know. Or maybe do a three-way feud with Balor, Andrade, Nakamura. I don't know because Balor and Andrade were hooked up to each other for a little bit. But, I mean, in the perfect world, I would have Balor join Ricochet in the whole club thing and be on Ricochet's side. I mean, sure. And that makes sense from the family point of view. I mean, there's a story that can be told there, you know? Because Ricochet's going to need friends. And we're going to talk about that later on when they have their match. But Ricochet's going to need friends eventually. So, they're going to figure out who they're going to use. But yeah, I mean, it's just interesting seeing both these guys in this position they were in. And, you know, there was a guy on Twitter who brought up a great point. You know, when people talk about pre-show, there's more people watching the pre-show problem than that actually watches the pay-per-view itself. You know, so there's more eyeballs potentially watching the pre-show because it's on YouTube and all that stuff than there is watching the main show itself. So being on the pre-show isn't that bad, folks. But it was interesting to see this was positioned as the first match and not the main event of the pre-show, which was the next match. WWE Cruiserweight title, Drew Gulak defending against Tony Nese. Gulak fresh off his non-title loss to Matt Riddle at the Evolve 10th Anniversary Show, which was a really damn good match. And that whole show in general was really, really fun. Strong show there. Everybody needs to check that out if they haven't watched it already. And Gulak goes in here against Tony Nese. Gulak, good old Philadelphia boy. And the crowd, you know, was into him for that. Another kind of short match. It was interesting that, you know, they had the two matches in the pre-show and they didn't have the first match start till like 6:30. So you got two matches that you squeeze in 30 minutes, plus squeeze in your height too for what you have left. So another short match. Gulak retains clean as he should have. Hits the Cyclone Crash. Just that simple, you know. Time to move on. But the thing about 205 Live, 205 Live has had a really, really solid year of wrestling in the ring and everything. They've been very fun, but it seems like that show is just in complete purgatory right now because nobody knows what the future is going to be. You know, when SmackDown goes to Fox and goes to Friday nights, I mean, we may not have a 205 Live anymore. It's just, you watch that show and it's like, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. You know, and they bring like, you know, Chad Gable gets on there and has that match with Jack Gallagher, you know, a kick ass match. And, you know, you're thinking, you know, they're going to do something with Chad Gable. He's reinvented and he hasn't been on television in weeks. I mean, it's the same group of guys. I mean, the most interesting thing on 205 Live right now is Mike Bennett being cuckolded by Maria. But so, I mean, it's just, I don't know, it's a weird deal. But, you know, Gulak, at least Gulak's been able to show off his wares. And I know that you've been real high on Drew Gulak, so espouse the virtues of the Reverend Drew Gulak.
Yeah, I think he's probably my WWE Wrestler of the Year so far this year. He's been excellent, of course, on 205 Live. He's been great in all those multi-man matches, you know, where they fight for the number one contendership and whatnot. Both the Nese title matches were real good, including tonight's. The Kushida feud on NXT TV was really, really good. The submission match was awesome. Both the Riddle matches he had this year, the first one on NXT TV back in February, which I actually think was probably a little bit better than last night's. And, of course, last night's match was excellent as well. Yeah, he's killing it this year. He's been a machine in the ring. Was no different tonight. This match was awesome. Nice was working really stiff in this match tonight. That 450 connected knees first to the chest. That did not look like it felt good. But yeah, Gulak was awesome again tonight. Those that one sequence towards the end of the match, the you know, with the sunset flip reversals and whatnot, into the power bomb was amazing. I loved that the he hit three big moves, the first two for near falls before you put him away with the cycling crash. Yeah, he's been awesome this year. He's probably my number one in-ring wrestler in WWE this year. And this was another very good match from Gulak.
Yep, absolutely. So we'll see where they go from here on 205 Live. Who knows? It's gonna be the revolving door of opponents. So we'll see who it ends up being. All right. It was announced before the show that Roman Reigns and The Undertaker versus Shane McMahon and Drew McIntyre would be the other match of the show, which is an interesting move, and it was. And I think this was the right decision to make. The fans were red hot for Undertaker here, and probably the best he's looked in quite a while, which is interesting. Him and Roman Reigns were well together as a team. Undertaker, you know, did good in all the spots. I mean, props to him for putting both the effort out there. Drew and Shane were fine doing what they did. All kinds of big bumps, you know, everything you would expect in this match. It was a no holds bar match anyway. Well, you know, all the stuff you expect. Shane hit his big dive on Undertaker on the floor, which he almost overshot him completely, and that would have been nasty. But hit him, and that spot, I think, got some blood on Taker's back because he was bleeding right after it. All kind of stuff going on here. Shane hits the Van Terminator with a trash can. Undertaker sits up, chokeslams Shane to hell, and then a great W camera shot as Undertaker is getting ready to deliver the tombstone. All of a sudden, Drew McIntyre rises from the abyss from behind him, is getting ready to put him out with a claymore, and then Roman just hits Drew hard like a freight train with a spear. And then Roman throws Shane to Undertaker. Taker gives him the tombstone. 1, 2, 3. The Graveyard Dogs, which, yes, there is a shirt. The Graveyard Dog shirt for these two as a team. End up on top. Both Taker and Roman get their moment in the sun in the ring as Shane lied dead on the mat. And the crowd was loving every minute of it. So this is exactly what it should have been. And it worked, friend. Like I said, props to The Undertaker. You know, Elias got involved. I didn't even mention that. I mean, props to The Undertaker here. He deserves it for his effort.
Yeah, this was actually great. Great smoke and mirrors match. Well worked, really, as well. Taker did look good in this match. You know, it helped that it was a tag match, but I thought he looked good when he first came in and put himself into the feud a few weeks back when he saved Roman from the beatdown. He looks to be in pretty good shape. His mobility is not even that bad, really. The club he had was getting Shane up for the first try on the tombstone, and they kind of covered it kind of well. I mean, it was kind of weird, but you know, he hit it fine at the end. I mean, that was hardly a flub, really. You know, nothing like the Goldberg match.
Yeah, I mean, Roman, it looked like Taker wasn't expecting Roman to throw him that hard into him.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, WWE production was excellent in this. I thought they actually did a really good job of making the Shane flying elbow to the table.
Yes, they did a really good job in this match.
Shane doing the throat slit before the Van Terminator was awesome. And, of course, the amazing shot of McIntyre rising from the abyss. Man, that was great. That was like, I popped huge for that. That's the kind of WWE, you know, production cinematography that's out of this world good when they hit it right. We'll talk about WWE production later on in the entrances of the main event if you know what I'm talking about, Chris.
Well, yes.
That was good too, but I mean, also maybe a little bit much. But yeah, this was great. I really like this a lot. Yeah, this was really well done. Cool post match. I liked it. McIntyre didn't take the pin. And Shane finally gets beat here by Taker, of course. But you know, still, it was a great little match. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Way better than I thought it was going to be with such an Undertaker. I mean, Roman's Roman, and I like Drew, but way better than I thought it was going to be. So I was definitely entertained. So definitely a thumbs up for that match, no doubt. So good on Undertaker, and you know, there's talk that Undertaker and Drew may have a SummerSlam match. So, if that's the case, I'm looking forward to it. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see how it plays out. Absolutely. Maybe Undertaker can get in even better shape. All right. Next, we have Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch backstage for a promo. And a lot of people have talked about this on Twitter and other places about the on-air chemistry between Seth and Becky. And this happens sometimes when you have real-life couples that, you know, I guess weren't expecting to become an on-air thing in wrestling, and they get on air, and it's just awkward, and this was awkward. I mean, their whole thing's been kind of awkward lately. So this was awkward. The writing hasn't really helped them out either. But I don't know. Maybe the intent is to kind of make them look corny together. Who knows? I don't know. But what do you think about the Seth and Becky relationship on television?
I cringe every time. I think it's
I think it's done now. I think it's pretty much.
Right. Yeah. It sucks. Or it sucked, maybe past tense. I think part of it is the writing team, to be fair, but boy, those jokes they threw off tonight were just terrible. It sucked. I did not like it. Cringe would be the word. Awkward would be the, nicer way of saying it.
Yeah. It's just weird that they went in that direction anyway. But, yeah. Maybe this is the end of that, because I think it's kind of cooled Becky off some. She was cooling off anyway. I think it's really cooled her off. And it makes Seth kind of look subservient in a way, would be the way to say it. So, I mean, I don't know.
He's lucky the Mike and Maria Bennett.
Oh yeah, well they were part of that.
they were.
They were part of that for sure. So yeah, we'll see what's going on from now on. We'll talk more about them later. So now after this, we got something very interesting. On July 22nd, there will be a Raw reunion. And they're bringing in all kind of big names from the past. Hogan's going to be there, Flair, Austin, your normal people that show up for all these things. And to me, this totally screams SummerSlam angle. Something's going to happen on this show.
Oh, yes.
To build up a major match for SummerSlam, possibly involving Triple H. You know, you agree with me on this one?
Oh, sure. Of course. Absolutely. That's totally a angle alert, as we fans like to scream and say. That's definitely an angle alert episode of Monday Night Raw, for sure.
Yep.
I'm excited for it. I'm interested to see what goes on.
Yeah, definitely. It's always fun to see the old crew come back. So, and it's in Tampa. So that's a great place to have a show like this, because a lot of people live in the area.
Yes, it is. I was thinking the same thing when they announced it was in Tampa.
A nice central area for everybody to get to. So there you go. We'll see what happens in a couple weeks. All right. So next, after the opening match, we have the Raw Tag Title match, where the Revival defend against the Usos. And this is the first of what will become a theme on this show in matches, as this is a really, really damn good match. Problem was, the crowd just wasn't into the early to middle part of the match. And they would get into it late. And like I said, it's a running theme on this show. But yeah, these two, I don't think these two guys could have a bad match. These two teams, excuse me, could have a bad match. And yeah, I love the stuff going on here. Revival doing, you know, the Power and Glory finisher was awesome. All kinds of other, you know, spots that, you know, other tag teams would do. Usos look great, as usual. So really, really strong tag match. Revival comes out on top. So they get a big win here with the Shatter Machine, clean win, and yeah, they're gonna keep going with them. They got a brand new T-shirt out, which is great, great looking shirt. So Revival's doing some good things right now after being, you know, a total joke for a while there. And so it goes to show you, you know, that sometimes you gotta go through some shit, you know, the rise to the top, but there's other things that's also involved in that as well, you know. With competition around, you kind of, you know, kind of helps out some things too. But yeah, what's your thoughts on this? And do you more or less, do you think that the Revival should retain?
It was a very good match. There was one interesting spot where they did the backbreaker elbow, and it looked like Jey Uso got really pissed off and angry for a second. That looked to be a brief shoot by Jay there. Maybe he got hit low or something, but he didn't look too happy. And there was kind of a 2 or 3 second reset there.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened there, but he didn't look too happy. This was a really good match. I don't know what was up with the Philly crowd. They're typically into everything. Initially, you know, during that match, as it was going on, I thought, well, you know, they didn't get a great spot after the Taker match. Well, I mean, there was really no.
It was the second match on the show.
On the card outside. I mean, you know, outside of the Last Man Standing match, you know, but, you know, that had certain circumstances.
But still, there's the excuse that people could always use, well, they're tired. This is the second match on the show.
right. Sure. You know, and like I said, I still think, you know, even in most shows, I think fans, not necessarily would be tired, but, you know, after a Taker match, you know, yeah, I get that the crowd would be, you know, not quite as hot, but this continued throughout the show. I thought that was interesting. I don't even really think it's an indictment. I just thought it was weird. But yeah, you know, it was a good match. The Revival retaining, I was fine with. I'm still not convinced they want to be in WWE. I really do think they want to be in AEW. But, you know, I think the reason they are keeping the titles is because WWE doesn't want them to jump. You know, I don't know what their contract.
From what I understand, right, that they've turned down the contracts that's been offered. So they're trying to appease them and get them to stay.
Yes, that's what I'm convinced is what's going on. The Revival, the reason they're tag team champions and winning is because WWE does not want them to jump at all. I'm pretty convinced of that. You know, they're trying to, as you said, appease them in every way. So that's kind of my stance, you know, or at least sort of my belief on why they're the tag champs. And, you know, I think they're awesome. I mean, I would rather them be in WWE. I mean, I've watched AEW's shows this summer, and, you know, I'm going to try to watch their TV and stuff. But, you know, I don't know if I want to watch, I don't know, 35 minutes spot foods with the Young Bucks. There's my monthly burial of AEW. It'll be interesting to see the Revival saga. It's kind of its own little saga and many
backstage. The thing about Revival
since AEW.
The thing about Revival is I love both guys. But they have, I mean, I don't know if the aesthetic is there for them to be what they could be in WWE, that they could be maybe somewhere else. It worked in NXT because of that fan base. They probably work in the AEW because of that fan base. The WWE main roster fan base is a different breed. And I don't know if the Revival would ever be seen as a top act unless they were unless the fans were conditioned that they should be in that spot like that. Which can be done, but I don't know if it ever happened. So we'll see. We'll see what happens down the road. So they're still the champs. So who knows? All right. Next, we have Aleister Black with his return match versus Cesaro. Black has been on SmackDown for months now, doing these promos, talking all a bunch of crap, and wants somebody to fight him. And Cesaro answered the call. And boy, I'm glad he did. This was a fucking awesome match. This was lots of great strikes, some really good wrestling. These guys were tearing it up, and the fans started chanting "This is awesome" during the match, which is interesting. I mean, there wasn't a lot of heat in this match, but the fans, I mean, they got into it. They started chanting "This is awesome." There was no real clear babyface or heel here as well. It was just two guys out there fighting, and it worked. And man, it's just everything was going on here was tremendous. The ode to Omega and Shima, the Meteora stuff was from the last night's AEW show was something. It's all the stuff that these guys were doing were great, and then of course the finish was tremendous, where Black just nukes Cesaro with the Black Mask. And pinned them 1, 2, 3. Interesting that happened like that, but, you know, because Cesaro's kind of getting a renewed push on Raw with Heyman. We're seeing that already. This is a match where neither one of these guys needed to lose, but Black winning was probably the right call overall. I mean, because they're just now getting him going back on SmackDown again, so he kind of had to win this match. But I love this match. This is one of my favorite matches of WWE this year. So what were your thoughts on this?
Yeah, this is great stuff. I love this match. I love the build. It was very refreshing and nice to see a mid-card match built the way that it was. His promo over the last few months. They probably went on too long, but you know, I liked how, you know, they built up, and then when finally, you know, somebody knocked on his door, and then they built up who it was, and they had the payoff of Cesaro, and that segment last week on TV was really well done. This was a really, really, really well built mid-card feud, and I wish they would do that for every damn mid-card feud. And it made me really want to see the match, and I actually think it probably made a lot of other fans want to see the match. And they delivered, and I like that they delivered on having a fight, because there was very much a strike-heavy match. And when you think of a fight, you think of strikes, and they delivered on that big time. The Meteora catch into the uppercut was amazing. Black countering the springboard uppercut with a knee to the jaw was totally awesome and sickening. And of course, that Black Mass was brutal as all hell. This match fucking ruled, man. This was awesome, for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I don't know if we're gonna have anything continuing with these two, because I kind of think they don't. I think they need to kind of go do their own thing. And Black may be somebody. Be somebody to go to Nakamura. You know, that could be a way to go to really get him going. And Cesaro, he'll have his people on Raw who he can feud with. But I think this needs to be like a one-off deal. You know, let them just go beat the shit out of each other and best man win, then we move on. You know, so
right,
good stuff, good stuff. Great to see it on this show. Absolutely love this match. All right, next we get Truth and Carmella are putting posters up for Drake Maverick, as Drake was doing for him when he had the title. And Alexa Bliss comes to her locker room, gives Nikki Cross a gift, which ends up being a new Bliss shirt. Street Profits show up, and Street Profits want to go to the post-match after party, all this other stuff. And it was what it was, but I thoroughly have enjoyed the Street Profits becoming like the official observers of WWE. Where they have been having two segments on shows where they just run down everything that's going on, and they just show up in different times, different places, and put their two cents in. I think it's a really interesting way of introducing them to the crowd, and it might be an effective way of doing it, because it's getting them over as characters first before they actually wrestle. So, and I'm pretty sure that they're going to be on the scene before long inside the ring. Although, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if they're going to still be NXT tag champions or not. So I kind of think they'll lose those belts before long, probably TakeOver. But yeah, what's your thoughts on how the Street Profits have been portrayed recently?
I've enjoyed it. Montez Ford is...
Oh, he's entertaining.
In the ring.
Him and Angelo play great off each
other. And as an overall performer.
They play great off each other.
Yeah, he's exceptional. Angelo Dawkins, for a long time, was like one of the most boring people in NXT. And the Street Profits made him relevant and interesting and fun. And he's gotten better over time. They're very entertaining. They're a lot of fun. I definitely think that them doing these segments, running down the shows and you know, showing their character is definitely going to get them over big time. And I think that's something that needs to be done more often, because just throwing somebody out there to just, you know, unless you're incredibly exceptional, kind of like somebody like Cesaro. Like, Cesaro got over because he was a good in-ring wrestler. In WWE, you know, character work is what's going to get you over, you know, 9 times out of 10. And this is the right way to go for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And they just, you know, they need to let them be them and not overproduce. That's one thing I hope that Heyman definitely allows. And you get to, I think this is a Heyman thing too. I think because they started doing this when Heyman started, you know, being in charge of Raw. So,
man, it's going to be interesting. We can bring this up maybe at the end of the show, but it'll be interesting to see, because I kind of have the idea of Bischoff will definitely roll with the sports theme deal on Fox, and I think he actually did that a ton during the Nitro. During the Nitro years too, and then of course Heyman will implement his style. But it's just an interesting thing to think about. I just kind of jumped to my head, but that's going to be an interesting discussion. We'll see how things turn out around SummerSlam. But go ahead. Came to my mind. Just kind of have the different philosophies of those two, because I think, you know, Heyman is definitely going to, you know, if, you know, depending on the freedom that he gets, you know, he's definitely going to have pretty much most of the wrestlers on the card have you know, some sort of regency or, you know, creative freedom, or at least, you know, and how they present themselves on TV. So that, yeah, I think that's a good point you brought up, because the overproduction of WWE wrestlers has been a huge detriment to the product for years. And that's something that I want to see change.
All right, next we get the handicap match for the WWE SmackDown Women's title as Bayley defending against both Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss. And if Nikki and Alexa won, they'd be co-champions. Well, that didn't happen. Now, Alexa has been sick for the past couple of weeks, and you could tell. Alexa was not in the, let's just say, the best of physical condition. She lost weight. She's lost weight because of being sick. And but she went out there and she did a really good job. First time she's really worked since then. Nikki's got this, you know, has got this strong push now, race on television, and props to her because she's definitely stepped to the task and she's done a really good job and playing this character. And I was surprised at the finish. Because I was thoroughly thinking that Nikki was going to beat Bayley herself and they would do the whole Code Women's Champion thing, but it would be the deal where people give Alexa shit because Nikki was the one who won the match, not Alexa. And that way Nikki and Alexa will have their breakup, which you know is going to happen. But no, Bayley won. And won clean with the big Macho Man elbow top rope on Nikki. Got the win. One thing I was saying about Bayley as well is she hit a fucking Indian deathlock in this match, and I was like, oh my God. And then got a crossface and Alexa at the same time. That was a great spot. But yeah, another fun match. And Bayley retains. So what's your thoughts on the match and the booking?
Fun little match. I definitely dug the double submission spot. That was cool. I'm fine with Bayley winning. I kind of think that her winning will slowly rehab her a little bit. I'm a big Bayley fan, and I actually think she's really worked hard and even gotten to be a little bit better promo even. And I think she's actually had a pretty good in-ring year. I think she's worked really hard in the ring. She's out to try to prove herself, and you know, I think it's very helpful for her sake that she continues to win, because she was really the biggest victim of any of the four horsewomen, in terms of booking on the main roster, clearly the biggest, even before the man gimmick with Becky, I think Bayley was actually more of a victim. I think there's probably an argument.
Bayley was the practical the ace of NXT for a while. The whole thing.
Yeah, she was. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, she was a top star in that promotion. And
yeah, for about nine months.
and she goes to WWE, and it was going to always be a chore for her to truly get over like she did NXT and WWE because of the whole gimmick. Her NXT growth was organic and it grew and it worked. And then when, you know, they bring her to the main roster, they try to do it again. They try to make her go back to her old ways, and it just wasn't working, and it was just tough. And now, basically, she still does – I mean, she's still doing the gimmick, but it's more of an aesthetic thing, really, than it was. I mean, she's still got the gear and the whole little deals, but she's not hugging, and she's kind of got more of an edge now, which she needed.
Yes. I'm with you. I originally, because they were sort of teasing that somebody like a Sasha or Charlotte might help Bayley. Well,
Charlotte was busy tonight, in the hot tub with Andrade, as he tweeted out during the show. El Idolo, indeed.
I kind of thought, well, they haven't talked about it or mentioned that again tonight on the pre-show or during the main show, so that's not going to happen. So I thought, you know, like you did, oh, well, you know, Nikki's going to get the win, co-champions deal, blah, blah, blah. didn't happen. You know, I was surprised about that. I don't think the Alexa Nikki story is over.
Oh, no.
I think that there's going to be I'm sure Alexa will snap on Nikki and probably attack her at some point. At least that's the direction I would assume they're going to go. It'd be interesting if they had a non-title feud between the two at SummerSlam. That'd be an interesting route to go. And I actually think that would be a good beneficial route to go, because we need to have non-title feuds in the
Well, I'm kind of thinking that we may have like a multi-team tag match with tag titles at SummerSlam.
Okay.
And that way they'll be involved in that, you know, then you get them, you get Kabuki sure. Warriors. I hate what a stupid name. Kabuki Warriors.
I know.
Maybe Good Mandy Lord. And Sonya, you know. Maybe Naomi and Natty. Just have a, you know, get the women on there in a big multi woman match for the tag titles. I could see that.
Right.
But Bayley though, that's the interesting one. I mean, what do you do? I mean, well, I know Charlotte's hanging around on the sidelines.
Charlotte's hanging around. I'm not sure if Sasha will ever come back. I think there's a chance she will. I think there's a good chance even. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see on that. But could be built into, you know, it would be shocked. You know, wouldn't shock me if we had a Bayley-Charlotte program. That's definitely a SummerSlam-level program. That would actually be my guess, Chris, would probably be Bayley-Charlotte for the title, if I were to guess.
Yeah. I mean, it makes probably the most sense out of anything. So, we'll see. And Sasha, who knows? Basically, she's calling that shot right now. So, we'll see what happens.
Yep.
Next, we get Last Man Standing. Braun Strowman, Bobby Lashley. Of course, they did the big angle a few weeks ago where Braun speared Lashley through the Raw-tron, whatever you want to call it. Corey is going, holy shit. That's the first big spot of the Paul Heyman era of Raw. And they had all kind of speculated injuries for Braun. And he walks out just fine. So we have all that. And this was exactly what it should have been. I mean, total all over the building brawl. They brawled from one side of the building to the other. They went through tables. They brought in the merchandise. They brought in the crowd. Some of the things that we had was Lashley turning over the German announce table on Strowman at one point, and Strowman just getting out from up under it. Suplex through the wall. Spear through the barricade. Then we get a fun series of spots. Lashley clears the barricade. What an athlete this dude is. Clears the barricade and goes up to Strowman. Strowman just grabs him and throws him into Shun Yamaguchi and Shofunaki at the international announcers tables. Surprise to the Japanese announce team for taking one for the team. And they brawled up into the fans. And then Strawn hit his big slam on Lashley off the risers into a gimmicked thing there. Crash pad. Both men disappeared. The referee is counting. Then all of a sudden, Braun Strowman, like the Kool-Aid man, comes through the drywall set up there going, "Raw!" And is the winner. Amazing. Crowd's going nuts for this. This was great. I think this has got to be the end of Braun and Lashley. And it's going to be interesting. Now, Braun is this guy who you're going to have him around, and you're going to have him in these interesting deals, but what do you do with him all the time? You know, that was somebody on Twitter, I can't remember who it was, that made an interesting comparison. They said that basically Braun has become what Abyss was in TNA. You know, In a way, where you're going to have him in spotlight stuff, but, you know, it's going to be all kinds of these different gimmick things and against all kinds of people, but who knows? Who knows who he gets next? But this was fun. This was a lot of fun. A total blast. I loved it. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, this was awesome. Great, great match. Great stuff. Total bomb fest. Lashley's actually had a pretty good year in the ring too. But they these guys toss each other around. The crowd. They even had crowd plants that got thrown around. This was a lot of fun. The suplex into the merch stand was hilarious and awesome. Lashley sort of took, not really. I think he was sort of careful not to. Almost took a Lawler Louisville like
yeah
down the aisleway, but not quite. I think he saved himself from it. The hurdle over the barricade into him getting catapulted into the damn Japanese announce team was tremendous. That was the spot of the match. The crash pad power slam was corny as hell and lame, but Braun storming out like a reverse shock master made up for it. That was an awesome ending there. Great match. Crowd loved it. Really, the only other match that got the crowd super into the show from beginning to end, outside of the Taker tag. This was an awesome match. Great
total
match.
Spectacle. And that's what it needed to be. Exactly what it needed to be. Right. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see where Braun and Lashley go from here. That's for sure. All right. Next, we get a SmackDown tag title match, three-way. Daniel Bryan and Rowan defending against Big E and Xavier Woods and Heavy Machinery. And yeah, here we go. Again, another damn good match. Lots of great stuff going on for everybody. I love Otis becoming super porky at one point during the match when everybody's on the floor. You know, Big E has his big tope and everything, the spear, and Otis thought he's going to do it too. He runs to the ropes and he's like, let me climb through the ropes. So I just jump off the apron to the floor like Super Porky does. Then Tucker hit his big plancha off the top rope like he's Ryo de Jalisco Jr. And love that stuff. Heavy Machinery look good here. They're finally starting to become a little bit more serious, which they need to do. Brian's awesome. Just awesome. One of the best, no doubt. And the stuff with him and Big E there towards the end was just awesome. Tremendous. The set, the finish. They hit the big ending on him. He does the job. 1, 2, 3. Man, what a kick-ass match this was. And the New Day have all the SmackDown titles now again. So what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, this is great. Heavy Machinery are an awesome tag team, really. They're not, quite at the level as the Usos or Revival or New Day even, but they're not that far off.
They're working their way there. They keep on going.
Their double team offense is awesome. They're entertaining. They've got great charisma. They're athletic. They can do strongman spots. They could do almost everything. They're really fun to watch. I loved Brian when he had Xavier in the surfboard. Charles Robinson was giving him the five count. And Brian goes, "Oh yeah, it's an ODQ match," and just started digging into his nose and nostrils and eyes. And it was great. Brian is the best ever, or at least one of the best ever. This was awesome. Big E Brian showdown at the end. Big E. Hulking up in a lot of ways and catching Brian on the moonsault counter and then the big ending finish there. This was an awesome match and I have an interesting thing to say in terms of the title changes and switches. I think it's evident, and we might talk about this a little bit more when we get to the main event. But I think it's evident that they are gearing up for SummerSlam, and they are gearing up for Fox, and they are giving certain people the championships and titles as promotional and kind of promotional material for bigger things to come soon. I think the booking reflected that. I don't know how you feel about that, but I think it's they're definitely giving people the championships that they feel need the titles for this big push towards SummerSlam in the fall.
Oh yeah, they're gonna slot the people where they want them for sure, for Seth and for SmackDown.
And I think the New Day winning the tag titles was one of those chess pieces.
Oh, moving, absolutely.
And
absolutely, yeah. So you're right on the money there. Yeah, absolutely. So and Brian, maybe now Brian returns to the singles.
Yes.
Who knows? I mean, I don't think they put it back with Kofi again. They could, but I don't think they will. But again, I mean, I don't know really on SmackDown who would this currently there would be the one to do it. I don't know. It's just interesting. It's interesting to see where a lot of these guys are going to end up going. That's for sure. Paul Heyman comes out next and as New Day is celebrating in the back and fans are going crazy because it's in Philadelphia. He cuts a promo teasing that Lesnar's going to come out, or will he? And I think it's a creative way of doing it that Heyman's going out there and saying this stuff, but he said, but I'm Paul Heyman. I'm a liar, you know? I could be telling the truth. So, yeah, this worked. And Heyman's of the Evolve show Saturday night was awesome there. Back in ECW Arena for the first time on camera since ECW was alive. So, that was a great moment, and you know, it's interesting to see Paul Heyman back in power. That's for sure. Next, U.S. Heavyweight title, Ricochet defending against AJ Styles. These two have had some good stuff going on. AJ going full heel, reuniting with Gallows and Anderson, who have fresh new contracts, getting $500,000 a year. Props to them for getting that money, and. They were at ringside for all this. Really good match. Fans, again, not into the early stuff. But, yeah, I mean, that's just the story the way this was. But really good match. Anderson and Gallows were getting involved a lot when AJ was in kind of trouble behind the ref's back. And Ricochet goes up top. Gallows pulls his leg up under him. And AJ hits a reverse Styles Clash. Off the second rope, which is cool, and won the U.S. title for the third time. So this feud is going to keep going. It's obvious what they're doing. So AJ pretty much had to win this match. I thought this doesn't hurt Ricochet. It's kind of like the Black Cesaro thing. Cesaro losing is not going to hurt him. Ricochet losing this is not going to hurt him because they're going to keep going with it. But like I said earlier, in the battle situation, Ricochet's going to have friends. I mean, we just can't have this three-on-one all the time. Somebody's got to step up with Balor or maybe even, you know, maybe the Street Profits. Maybe that's the way they could bring him in. I don't know. But Ricochet needs friends.
Maybe they'll turn the Viking Raiders face.
That's an option they could do. They could do that. So... Oh, what were your thoughts on this match and where we go from here?
Match was real good. Real good match. AJ's heel turn was much
he's so
needed,
much better.
I think. Very fresh. I think he's just better
goofy.
As a heel, particularly yeah. WWE. He's, you know, I liked him as a face, you know, fine, but he's just really accept heel. Even in the ring, I think he's even in the ring, I think he's a little bit better. At least nowadays, I think he's a little bit better as a heel. This was a really good match. I think you know, I think they're definitely going to continue on with the feud. I think they'll have a big title match at SummerSlam. I think they'll get more time at SummerSlam. I think they'll probably go out and try to kill it big time at SummerSlam. I wouldn't be shocked if they got 25 minutes or so at SummerSlam and then went out and had a and had a killer match. That's kind of what I expect. And I'm with you. I think, you know, the big thing is Ricochet needs friends. I've gotten in the habit of when I watch faces get beat down, I'm always thinking, where the hell are the other faces to come and save them?
But it's the WWE, and that don't happen that much.
I know it is. It drives.
That was John Cena's story for my whole career.
I know it was. So, you know, but you're right. Ricochet needs friends. There's a tag team somewhere who they could throw out and help them. And I'm sure we'll get some six bands of some kind leading into SummerSlam. But yeah, real good match.
Yeah, absolutely. Ricochet is definitely a guy who he's definitely lucky he's on the Paul Heyman show. That's for sure. He's a guy.
Yes.
And that's the thing. The young guys, they should be very pleased. That's for sure. So we'll see what happens from here. I mean, Ricochet and AJ Styles have invented two Raws lately. So they're definitely making this into a big thing. So we'll see where they go from here. All right, next, maybe one of the greatest goddamn things I've ever seen in my life. Kevin Owens has, of course, he returned. He was babyface. Then he turned heel again on New Day. And it was like, same old Kevin Owens again. Then he became vocal about not really wanting to be a heel again. He wanted to have his own babyface run. He's then talked to Austin, and Austin told him to, you know, do what he need to do and just don't stop talking. And now they're shooting this angle where he's basically becoming an Austin CM Punk type against Shane McMahon. And had thing on SmackDown where he got kicked out of the building. He cut the pipe bomb promo. Mentioned Buddy Murphy and Liv Morgan and all this other stuff. And they're really trying to make it, you know, seem shooty. And then he attacks Shane. And he gets booked against Dolph Ziggler tonight, too. Dolph's been working with Shane a little bit. So they go out here. Dolph gets in the ring. Owens gets in the ring. Owens hits a stunner. Wins in 15 seconds. Perfect. Just perfection.
Thank God.
And it's funny because I've seen some people on Twitter that were predicted that this exactly was going to happen, and it did. So props to them. So and Owens gets out there, cuts a big promo on Shane again. Talks about Shane can't do shit to him tonight because he's been tombstone by the Undertaker and he's not available, and told him he could kiss his ass and go to hell. So there's a SummerSlam match we know for sure is happening. Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon.
Yep.
So that means now we're finally done with Shane McMahon Roman Reigns. So that's done.
Roman never beat Shane.
Yeah, Roman never beat Shane. Exactly. Isn't that something? And so now Shane and Owens are going to do their thing. And Kevin Owens in this role, I think, has the potential of being really great. So we'll see where they go from here. Also, another thing, too, was during that deal they have, which I probably need to start watching this more often, the stuff where they have backstage, the watch-along, where Pat McAfee hosts and different people go in and out.
I watch them every time. They're very
Owens, after Owens' match, sitting on the couch is Adam Cole. And Owens comes running back through there and just jumps on Adam Cole. And we have the Kevin Owens, Adam Cole reunion, Mount Rushmore from PWG actually gets mentioned on WWE television. I mean, that's hilarious. And it seems like Kevin Owens is having a lot of fun. So I'm all for this. As long as they let Owens go over, that's the thing. Owens has to go over Shane. And I think they'll do it. I think they'll pull the trigger on it. But the biggest loser in all this is probably Sami Zayn, because now he doesn't have Kevin Owens to hang around with anymore. So what's your thoughts on this whole deal?
Yeah, this was great. I like Kevin Owens babyface. I enjoyed him before the turn on New Day, and I'm enjoying him a lot now. Never been a big fan of him as a in-ring worker, really. But for character, babyface is much suits him much more, in my opinion. And he's awesome and a lot of fun. Thank God somebody saw the brilliance of getting Dolph Ziggler with one shitty stunner by Kevin Owens pinned in 15 seconds. Thank God. Yeah, this is great stuff. I'm with you. I read a rumor on the cage side seats deal or whatever that the idea is the Kevin Owens stuff is to eventually phase Shane McMahon off of WWE TV. Or at least for the most part, I'm sure Shane would show up for Mania season. But if that's the case, Owens going over Shane to maybe in Shane's control or some kind or something, I think would be a fitting end to the
Shane. Well, what we're eventually going to have, though, and I've been saying this for a while. Eventually, we're going to have the Triple A Shane McMahon deal.
Oh yeah, of course. Maybe yes. That's a Mania match next year.
Mm-hmm.
Fingers crossed, right?
I know it, right?
I'd actually enjoy that.
For many reasons. the stories in that match would be sure. Something else. I imagine the promos.
Right, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, this is the right way to use Owens, I think. So, and it's definitely the right way to use Ziggler.
Yes.
So, yeah, we'll see how that goes. Anyways, good stuff. The good stuff. All right. Next, we get the WWE World Heavyweight title match. Kofi Kingston defending against Samoa Joe. This was interesting to watch. They had a good match. The crowd, again, very quiet. And this time, you can definitely use the tired excuse here, as they've been there a while. They did the stuff on television. Kofi shot him the bird and all that stuff. But it seemed to me that it didn't do really enough to really make this a big deal in a way. And then they get here and it's just, it's a good match of what it was. Joe controlled, but at one point, to tell you the story, the match, the fans were in dueling chants, "We want Lesnar, no we don't." So that tells you right there that they were, I think they were pretty much thinking, okay, let's get this match over with and see if Brock's going to come out. And that was their mentality, and it kind of hurt the match. And then, Kofi hits the Trouble in Paradise out of nowhere and gets the pin. So he beats Joe. Joe loses yet another big title match. It's interesting that he lost the U.S. heavyweight title and then graduated to a world title feud, but that's a whole nother story. But
I thought that, but too.
He loses another big match. And Joe's Joe. He'll be all right no matter what. But Kofi wins. No Brock. He escapes. He lives on to fight another day against who knows. So, yeah. To me, of all the matches on this show, this seemed like the match that was the least in my mind. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it was, the match was fine. It was okay. It went a little bit shorter than I thought it would have. I'm kind of with you. They didn't do the build up and all that interesting. Joe's promos are always great, but I mean, there wasn't anything that really sort of caught you and really wanted you to get, to see the match other than, Joe's, regularly good promos. There was no angle or moment that thought that made you kind of want to, really see this. And I think that hurt the match for sure. And I think you're right. The looming Lesnar situation definitely hurt the heat of the match as well. And it was kind of funny, right when the chants started, I wonder if they were like, all right, go home. Because Kofi hit the Trouble in Paradise like literally 30 seconds after the chants started and won. The match was fine. It was good. I don't know. I think ultimately it was to have the New Day have all the championships. And I think it's interesting,
I think by SummerSlam weekend, we're going to have two units on two brands have all titles, because I think Undisputed Era is winning all the belts at TakeOver this year. At TakeOver,
well, yeah, Cole's already in the champion, so the tag belts on two of the other three.
And then Roddy, I think, is going to win the other one over Dream. But, so I think it's interesting. I'm not sure if that, you know, I'm not really saying that that'll, indicate, Undisputed Era jumping up to the main roster, but I do think that we might have that situation. I just think that's just an interesting situation that I think we might have come SummerSlam weekend. Not something that you really ever see in a wrestling company, but I think we might have that going on. But yeah, I think ultimately the goal was to have New Day have all the belts going into sort of a more important season, and sort of have the New Day have all, you know, have the belts type deal. I think it was one of those deals where it was sort of a makeshift kind of feud, kind of like how AJ Rusev was last year, if you recall.
Rusev, who's that?
I know. But it was one of those July pay-per-view feuds in this case, Joe, that just sort of came and went. I don't think there's really much more to it. I think Joe's kind of the new gate company. I think he's kind of has the same position that Mark Henry had. Mark Henry could always get over his, you know, feuds and programs. And Joe can too, you know. I think he's kind of the new gatekeeper, main event gatekeeper.
Joe could be someone they throw out Aleister Black to as well.
There you go. Yep, that's probably a brilliant idea, and that's what I would do for SummerSlam, is have Black beat Joe. Honestly, that's probably what I would do. It makes total sense. There you go, right there. Do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's very, very easy to see that. Who knows? Who knows? But, Kofi lives on, like I said, fights another day. All right, next we get the main event of the show. Extreme Rules match, Raw Women's title and the Universal title online. As Seth and Becky defending against Baron Corbin and Lacey Evans. I was disappointed that Baron Corbin was not wearing the shirt he wore during the pre-show, because that shirt was fucking awesome. He was in his normal black shirt for this match. I mean, that shirt he had in the pre-show. Good Lord of mercy. He looked so fucking sleazy in that shirt. I mean, he looked like he was about ready to pull out a pound of coke and just do it right there on the spot. You know, he looked tremendous. And so they come out, and Lacey takes off her dress to reveal her gear. And it has Seft written on her ass. But the camera work decides to go a little close. And we almost have a proctology lesson here. Describe what happened in that entrance there, Devin.
Well, if anyone has been a longtime wrestling fan and has watched wrestling in the States in the last 10 to 20 years, if you recall a group in TNA known as the Beautiful People, they would typically do, they were on TV, so there was like a TV 14 product, and it was like Velvet Sky and Angelina Love and Madison Rain, and they would do a close up of their ass as they, you know, walk into the ring. This is basically what that was. Or it was basically for the, you know, WWE and WCW fans, Stacey Keibler / Miss Hancock slow motion roll up to her ass. I mean, this is basically like exactly
what that was. But Lacey's in her gear, not in the thong.
Right. Oh, sure. Although her gear is
often revealing. Yeah, it's very high.
It was, yes. It was an interesting choice. Someone on Twitter in bold, Kevin Dunn.
She's his type. He loves blondes.
There you go. But yeah, that was an interesting production choice, to say the least.
Yes, so we had that, and then Seth and Becky come out, and the match goes, you know, it's Extreme Rules, but the men have to be with the men, women have to be with women, because we can't do intergender. We can't do that. So, the match had its spots. I mean, there was a spot there that kind of was dragging a little bit, but the match was fun overall. Definitely, it built up for the end, which is exactly what, you know, you would want. And we get all kind of stuff with weapons, with kendo sticks and chairs and this, that, and the other. They set tables up where Seth and Becky did a double dive. Becky off the middle rope with a leg drop through the table on Lacey, and Seth hit a big frog splash on Corbin from the top rope to the floor to the table. And they got back in the ring eventually, and Corbin hit the end of days on Becky. Oh, my God. Seth Rollins goes completely nuts when that happens. Curb stomps him 3 times and then pins him. So, the goes 1, 2, 3. Now, also during this point, and during the match, we got the Dueling Lesnar chants. So, the fans were waiting on it, and then the music hit. And they went nuts. And Brock comes out, and they finally decide to cash it in. And he gives us some German suplexes, hits the F5, wins the title, crowd goes nuts, Brock's champion one more time. And it was something that was, you know, everybody figured was going to happen. It was a matter of when, but mostly, you know, everybody was thinking it was going to be Kofi because of, you know, the whole SmackDown going to Fox deal. But no, it's on Roman. So it makes sense in that way because Paul Heyman's in charge of Raw. So, of course, you know, he's going to probably want Brock. But this also serves to be a creative way of doing this because now Heyman, if he stays in control for as long as he is, if he has the autonomy to do this, he can now pick the person to beat Brock and make it really count. Now, that's the question, okay? Do we go back and do Seth Rollins again with Brock, which I think we might get at SummerSlam no matter what, which is fine, but do we think he would go over? Do we go back to Roman Reigns? Well, although he's on SmackDown, so that'd be kind of interesting to try to explain that one. And have Roman Reigns and Brock do it one more time. Or does Heyman pick somebody brand new, fresh, and put them in this position to be the guy to beat Brock, make him into a big star? I'm leaning towards that myself. And there's one man that I think is going to be the one to do it. And this man has lobbied for it himself on Twitter numerous times this year. And it would be an awesome match whenever they decide to pull the trigger on it. Matt Riddle. Matt Riddle being the guy to beat Brock. Because I think you kind of have to do it that way. You have to have somebody be the, you know, be fresh. And it's never, that hasn't done it before. Because we've seen Braun, we've seen Rollins, we've seen Roman, we've seen it. Make a star, make a superstar. And who better than somebody that's got legit experience, which Brock can respect that, who is just, you know, dripping with charisma, could be make him into a major star. It makes perfect sense. Perfect sense. Now, I mean, I don't know if you were with WrestleMania or whatever, but it makes perfect sense to do it. So, what are your thoughts on this whole thing?
As far as the main event match is concerned tonight, it was a fun match. I thought at first it was kind of eh. Then when they started picking up the weapon spots and the table spots and whatnot, it was good. The one thing I'll say in the positive of being a mixed tag instead of an intergender tag is, when Corbin hit Becky with the end of days, it felt like a big deal.
And it was like, oh no, you know, that's a no-no. And I like that in terms of storytelling.
The crowd thought that way too. You saw, I mean, you could feel it.
Yes. Yes, the heat was through the roof there. Of course, Seth destroyed Corbin with the
and chair
before.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that. Stomps.
Yep, and chair. Yep. You know, of course, Brock comes out, cashes in. You know, it was what it was.
I would love for the Riddle Lesnar thing to happen. I don't even think it's
impossible. It's not, because Heyman.
I think it's possible depending on. Yes, sir, like you said.
And supposedly Heyman's in love with him. Supposedly Heyman's in love with Matt Riddle.
I definitely think it is a months at the least.
Oh, yeah. I don't think you can do it at SummerSlam.
I think Lesnar's got another lengthy title reign coming up, to be honest. So, you know, if that were to happen with Riddle, I think it's definitely a 2020 type deal, not a 2019 one. But I do think we're going to have Brock and Rod SummerSlam. Yes. I do kind of wonder if they'll protect Rollins in the loss. I think they kind of need to, honestly, because I don't think Rollins beat Brock at SummerSlam. But I think you've got to do a thing where maybe somebody costs.
Well, what you do, because, I mean, you basically have him put on this fight where Brock's just beating the shit out of him, but he keeps coming back, kind of, you know, what they've done before with Brock. And then give him the offense where he's got Brock reeling, rocking and reeling. And, you know, he maybe even gets the curb stomps on him because, I mean, that's how it'd be in WrestleMania. It gets curb stomps on him. And then Brock eventually just, you know, somehow finds a way to get up and hits a quick F5 and beats him. You know, like he just had to do it out of desperation. There's ways of doing it.
Sure.
There's definitely ways of doing it where Rollins looks like, man, he gave it all he had, and Brock just caught him with a shot, you know, caught him with a kill shot.
Right.
So, I mean, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. And
yes, for sure.
Listen, if you got those of you that's listening to this show, they, you know, that I can't, you know, I'm not a fan of the whole Brock thing, but this is a different set of circumstances because of Heyman. Of Heyman being in charge. Heyman's a guy who I won't say he can manipulate the whole situation, but he can. Where he can get Brock to do what he wants him to do. Because he'll listen to Paul. So I think we'll see more of Brock than we have. And we already have seen a little bit more of him, you know, and doing different things, but I think this is going to be a little bit different than we had in the past. Am I the biggest fan of it? No, but I understand what they're going to do here. Hopefully, that's one thing with Heyman. You know, I know a lot of people shit on the whole, you know, the Cedric Alexander thing from Monday, that where he was under the mask, you know, as Gary Garbutt, blah blah blah, and they did the deal where they beat him, which, you know, yeah, that's not the way you normally do something like that, but I understand what Heyman's trying to do. He's trying to get Cedric out there in this position, and they take the mask off, and, you know, it's like, yeah, you came up short, but this is you trying to make an opportunity for yourself, and you got one up on Shane in that way, and the authority for doing that, even though they did beat you, but you went out there and did it. So, you know,
right.
Even if they keep it going, where they put him with Drew, him beating Drew as himself is way more important than him beating Drew or Shane under a mask in a gimmick. Because what's going to be remembered, you know, is that happening? And then what you do then is that you do that cheap win with a mask deal, and then he gets the shit kicked out of him as, you know, revenge. Now you're doing a different way where, yeah, he may have lost, but now you set it up where, you know, he could come fighting back as himself and get a win. and look more like a guy who should be on that level. So it's going to the grand thing. I'm giving Heyman the benefit of the doubt on all this stuff because I know what he can do, and if they let him do it, that's the thing. They gotta let him do everything.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Now I think we could, quickly talk about, a little bit about how Raw and SmackDown might look over the next couple of months. Just for a few minutes. I think with Raw, we're going to see a lot of young guys come to the forefront, like we've already mentioned. Some guys are going to get rehab, like he's already gotten rehab a little bit. But I think one thing we're definitely going to see is the quintuple Heyman style bleeding into one another type thing. We're going to see that a whole lot. I guess an example would be kind of like, the sort of epitome of that was like Dreamer Raven, Loser Leaves Town from 97, right? And then the post-match and all the stuff that happened afterwards. We're going to see maybe not something to that extreme effect, but we're going to see a lot of segments like that. Wouldn't you say, Chris, on Raw?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. If they let it happen, that's what I'm saying. If they let it happen.
Yes. It depends on how much freedom Heyman has. And with Bischoff, I've listened to 83 Weeks some, and he makes a point to say that he didn't always have creative, he was obviously, kind of had final say on, a lot of times, in terms, but he wasn't the one booking every little detail like a Sullivan was or Terry Taylor. Or so, right. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of things he offers. And we all know his TNA run stunk. That's obvious. So I think some people are afraid of
But here's the thing with Bischoff, though. Bischoff actually now is in charge. Well, I won't say in charge, but he is. He's in charge of something, and he doesn't have the albatross of Hulk Hogan on him.
Yes, yes. That's a great point. I definitely think, Fox wants that sports-based, theme going. Bischoff is a perfect guy to do something like that. During the Nitro days, Bischoff always had competitive matches on TV with the cruiserweights and even with the martial arts stuff with Glacier and Mortis and he even had, some women's wrestling, when he had Medusa and then the Japanese women and several tag teams to throw out there and the TV title with Regal I think SmackDown's definitely going to be a very much a sports based, lots of competitive matches, probably with some younger stars being brought up to the forefront as well, which is also
maybe, but I think Bischoff though, he's like a name brand guy too.
Sure, of course. That's definitely true. Heyman's definitely going to be somebody who's going to be more willing to push the younger talent. But I think on SmackDown we'll definitely see a focus on kind of the sports space type deal. At least in terms of in ring storylines and stuff. I don't know yet
here's the thing that's going to be the most interesting in all this. And I've said this on other things, this whole wild card deal is what throws the wrench in everything, because now you have to kind of placate the other show in a way by involving them in it. And who's to say that Heyman and Bischoff may not try and screw each other's storylines up?
Yes. Yes. I have thought of that.
That's why I got to do away with this wild card deal.
That's
That's why we have Bruce. Bruce is the God. Imagine those. God, those three are working in the same company together now, under Vince.
Yeah,
good Lord.
Exactly. There's a lot of egos involved in this whole thing
with Triple H in the mix.
Yeah, he's just waiting. He's biding his time.
Oh yeah.
He's just buying his time. But, I mean, they got to do away with that wild card deal. Definitely.
Yes. That's a must. That's a must.
Because it could lead to major problems. So,
for sure.
But anyway, sure. Extreme Rules has happened. So, now the question is, thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle?
Thumbs up. This was a great show. You know, Brock winning the title wasn't my favorite thing in the world at all, but it was going to happen eventually. I expected it to happen tonight. So, you know, it is what it is. Thumbs up, though, still. Lots of good things on this show. And in some ways, you know, WWE, I really do think, has turned the corner this summer in the last month or so. The question is, can they fully turn that corner? That's a wait-and-see thing. WWE has had many times where they've turned the corner and been on the way of turning the corner and then never fully turned it, or got there and then completely went backwards not long after. So we'll see. They got competition now. And it seems like real competition for the first time in 20 years. You know, it seems that way. So a lot of interesting things to look forward to in the coming months.
Absolutely. And on a show where Brock Lesnar became the Universal Champion again, I give this a wholehearted thumbs up. because the matches were all, at the very least, good. I mean, there was no bad matches on the whole show. Good to great. Some really strong stuff on this show. They really would have to do something completely catastrophic for me to give it a thumbs down. And like I said, Brock win the title. I mean, it made sense because they've been building this up. You know, it was going to happen. They've been building it up. And, you know, me being kind of optimistic on where Heyman's going to go in the end with this, you know, it eases me on this one. So, absolutely. Definitely a thumbs up. And that, again, WWE Networks had a great weekend. Evolve was a tremendous show. This was a really good show. So, yeah, I haven't watched AEW yet, so I can't talk about that. But, I mean, they've had a really great weekend. So, they should be proud of how everything played out. So, we'll see. We'll see what happens. And SummerSlam is August 11th, so we got another month to go before that. It's early in August this time. And it's going to be interesting. Yeah?
Interesting fact, real quick, just before we end. I believe this is the earliest SummerSlam since SummerSlam 97.
Yeah, because I remember that was early. Yeah, that's right.
That was August 3rd, I believe. This is the earliest SummerSlam in 22 years.
Yeah, crazy. And another thing, too, to close Brock Lesnar's day, his oldest son, Luke, is training at the Performance Center in Orlando right now. Post it on Instagram.
Oh, here we go.
I got to say on Twitter, I can't wait for for Luke Lesnar versus Dominic Mysterio to make a pay-per-view in 5 years in WWE. Here we go. The children are coming, folks. Children are coming, and we're getting old.
just wait till what's her name? Aurora Rose goes.
Birdie Danielson. Yeah.
Yes. There you go.
Birdie Bella coming in, and who knows if we'll have the Levesque daughter show up too, for Cindy.
Yeah. There you go.
Shane's sons. We're getting old.
Oh, God. We could have a whole podcast.
We're getting old. crazy. But anyway, that's Extreme Rules. We thank you for listening, and we will be back in a month for SummerSlam. So, for Devin, this is Chris, and so long from the Peach State of Georgia.
Consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. And we want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.